You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 7 June. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, chatting with Pierre Radenhurst, the charts for the week ahead, Gary Boyson on how to pick your winning emerging market, and Pan-African Resources on expiring mining rights. I didn't know that they expired, although probably I should have known that. Some morning headlines for MoneyWeb: G7 reaches historic agreement on global tax reform, essentially the 15% minimum tax rate. They've all got rates above that, but it's effective rate. And sticking my poll in for today at this point here, which you'll find on our LinkedIn, our Facebook, and our Twitter, G7 got those minimum rates. Will this do anything to boost government collections? Not at all. Yes, about time. Or hey, corporates will just move or dodge. And then remember Anglo America listing their coal assets to get today. Thungela, you get one new share for every 10 Anglo American shares. So we should expect Anglo American to drop by a tenth of the price that Thungela's are trading at. Morning markets, US was green on Friday, S&P up 0.9, NASDAQ up strongly 1.5%, Asia mixed, Sydney off 1%, 0.1% rather, Turkey up 0.4. Commodities, mostly red overnight, gold, over the weekend, $1,890, Rand 13.43 against the US dollar. Top 40 opening call, looking for about 240 points down, that's about 0.4%.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Petri Radenhurst, founder of Herenia Capital Advisors. Petri, morning. Appreciate the early morning time. Your update, which you put out on Sunday afternoons, looking at, and I mean, even our local, but particularly the offshore, the tech-weighted NASDAQ, the S&P 500, the Russell 2000, they've all kind of been range-bound for, in some cases, a month or two, in some cases, a little bit longer. I mean, the Russell going back to sort of March point. And you're bullish here. You're saying it looks like we can break through and potentially move higher. Certainly S&P, but probably Russell and NASDAQ as well.
Good morning and thank you. Yes. And yeah, I mean, like you mentioned, markets have generally been sort of going sideways over the last couple of months. And I know it doesn't necessarily feel like that because it's been somewhat volatile. We've had some pretty amazing size moves, right? But I guess, you know, over the last few months, that's really just been a product of volatility. Mm-hmm. And overall markets have just really gone sideways, right? And these consolidations are actually looking relatively bullish at this stage, particularly if you look at something like the S&P 500. You know, believe it or not, on Friday, it was a record high close, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, looking at some of the other markets, it's very likely at this stage that they'll follow through. And we've seen that over the last few months, small caps, the Russell 2000, as you mentioned, has been actually one of the market leaders, one of the strongest indices on the market, only really over the last, I want to say, almost month and a half, 2 months, has it not been playing that leader role.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, I guess now we see whether or not that leadership returns. So small caps continue to rally. We see, obviously, you know, a little bit of inflation starting to rear its head. And that's playing out in the commodity space and the precious metal space. So from where we stand now, unless we see the central bank or central banks at least start to taper some of the monetary policy that they've unleashed on us over the last year or so, it's very likely the markets just keep going up, right?
Yeah, and markets, and also, I mean, Brent. I mean, Brent, trading 70, which I think's a lot. And I know that the Saudis are saying, no, they're going to continue with their plan to sort of phase in new production. But this chart, I mean, from the lows of what was that, April last year, but even from a bit of a pullback in September, it's been almost one-way traffic. And this chart is looking, I mean, you're saying 75 and change, maybe even north of 86 in time. This is a fairly seriously bullish chart.
Yeah, and I think what's relatively important also is that, I mean, the chart that I look at there is only really over, I think, almost 3 years,
yeah.
Right? So it's not actually all that long term. If you look back even further, you start to get an even more kind of bullish picture. I mean, if you remember 2013, oil was trading $110, $120 a barrel, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I guess the question is really whether or not we make it all the way up to those heights. And there's a lot of things, I think, behind that, driving that. It's not just a bullish setup on the chart. Of course, that does help. But a lot of it is, I guess, driven by just the supply-demand dynamic.
Yeah.
This is something that we've been chatting about, I think, for a while now, where there actually is a structural shortage in the supply side of the oil market. Even before the pandemic, that was a problem, that there's just not enough production to keep up with global demand. And, you know, given the pandemic and all everything that had happened, we had a sort of global shutdown of the economy, really. The oil price essentially collapsed, which in turn removed even more production from the equation. And now that the world's coming back to sort of full production, you know, I mean, just wait until we start traveling and flying airplanes around again, right? And going on holiday. Demand is going to go through the roof, right? And from where I'm standing, at least, it looks as though higher oil prices, 85, 86, yeah, I mean, maybe in the next couple of months. But if we start seeing, okay, guys, you know, borders open, life, a.k.a. or semi, returns to normal, without any sort of major new projects on the horizon, it looks set for oil price to keep heading even above $86, right?
Yeah, I'd forgotten back from what, February 11 through to June of 2014, $110, $130 a barrel of oil. I'd forgotten about those hard-priced oil days. Petra Redenhuis, founder, Herenia Capital Advisors, appreciate the early morning.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Gary Boyson, portfolio manager at Rand Swiss. Gary, appreciate the early morning. You put out a tweet Friday morning that it truthfully stopped me in my tracks a bit. It's a 1 month or 1 year performance. If you look at the global market over a year, I mean, South Africa, I mean, top of the charts. I mean, absolutely ahead of US, UK, all the other markets. But importantly, and you were saying, is also ahead of China. Pick your emerging market carefully. I take your point on it, but how easy was it a year ago to say it's about South Africa, and how much does our home bias perhaps also play into it? We worried about our politicians and our load shedding, and we just can't believe that actually South Africa might come out top of the charts.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always difficult. I mean, predicting the future is incredibly difficult. So what we do normally at the beginning of each year is we do this webinar where it's kind of a little bit tongue-in-cheek, and we bring all the comments in and we say, you know, you guys answer these 25 questions and predict what you think is going to happen, and we'll answer it, and a year later we'll kind of look at our scorecard and see how we did. So that tweet really was, you know, one of our big predictions at the beginning of the year was that we'd see a swing back into emerging markets out of the very buoyant developed markets that we saw the year before, just as the coronavirus panned out. But yeah, looking at those numbers that I put out in the tweet, you know, with South Africa up around 55%, you know, rebased in dollar terms over 1 year versus China only up 13%, yeah, our call on emerging markets doesn't paint the whole picture. You know, emerging market performance has been very, very divergent. With, as you say, South Africa doing incredibly well, mainly because of the higher commodity prices, and China really on the back foot because of the regulatory crackdown we've seen on some of their big tech companies. You know, just over the weekend, they were banning WeChat from allowing content that included putting underpants over people's head and putting their nose in fortune telling. So, you know, the regulatory changes in China is impacting it. Obviously, the higher commodity price is also a negative for China. But I was having a look at it. I mean, a lot of it obviously is the currency playing into it as well. So, I mean, we've obviously got the Rand a lot stronger. And I've got kind of figures from, you know, just this year compared to last year. But South African Rand, if you look at all emerging market currencies, by far the best performer up until the end of last month, up around 7% in dollar terms, versus the Turkish lira, which is down 12.6%, Argentinian peso down 10.4%. So it just shows you how different, you know, a specific emerging market can be. And it does. It really comes down to, you know, playing that broad emerging market theme often just isn't enough.
Yeah, and in this case, I mean, as you talk, in hindsight, I start to think to myself, perhaps this wasn't the hardest call. If we go back a year ago, governments the world over, ours included, at that point President Trump and Europe and the like, were all talking around infrastructure as a response to the pandemic. You know, infrastructure ultimately is commodities, and we are ultimately a commodity economy. So if we're thinking that it's going to be about those commodities, then absolutely we are going to be in that pound seat, both for the currency and for the equity.
Yeah, absolutely. And even last year, a lot of clients asking us, you know, how do you play commodities? And as you say, you know, you tend to, when you're very close to something, you know, like the South African economy, you kind of almost have your blinkers on, and you're looking like, how can I play housing stocks in the US, and what is a good US building company? And yeah, suddenly you do. You need to take a step back and say, wait a minute. You know, South Africa would be a fantastic way to play this based on rising commodity demand. But, you know, it's something that came up in our investment committee meeting last week as well. Just the fact that, you know, with the stronger currency, the currency trading at 13.42 to the dollar at the moment, and thinking back to what it was like in 2008 and the strengthening after that, it's natural for South Africans, and certainly South African trading desks that I've interacted with, the big banks and kind of the smaller desks, to be consistently bearish on the local currency, you know, even in the face of, you know, very different data coming out. So I think, you know, maybe just a word of warning that around 13.42, I still look at it and think this looks like a great time to take funds out of the country to go and buy hard currencies to invest overseas. Certainly a lot better than it was maybe 6 months ago. But at the same time, there is, if you look at kind of just the chart of the rand dollar exchange rate, you'll see that, you know, once you get these big strengthenings, this can persist for years at a time. I mean, this could be 2-3 years that we're at these stronger levels.
Yeah, and I think, and it's the point I made up front, and it's an important one. It's hard for us as Africans to look out the window and see the challenges to our country and to realize that actually there's opportunity in our market. And it is, you know, we talk about it often. This is not a new or an interesting statement, to the sense of the market is not the economy. Our market is our stock market is running on different fundamentals, and we need to sort of look through our buying and say there's opportunity here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's easy to look at the problems that we have currently. As you say, markets are very different to you know, economies. And if you look at what's driving our listed environments, those drivers are very different from the news headlines that you're going to get from kind of mainstream media every day around the corrupt politicians, etc. So I think, yeah, absolutely, yeah, I'll take that point. But at the same time, you've got to go and look at the other emerging markets and other countries that you're comparing to. And it's always the sense that the grass is greener elsewhere. But if you look at Argentina, you look at Turkey, you look at Brazil, these other competing emerging markets, there are real problems. On top of that, you've got to look at population demographics as well. Last week, we also had, I consider China an emerging market, but last week, we also the idea that China was going to, allow, a three-child policy for the first time. But some of these emerging markets have demographic issues that are very different from, say, African issues. Africa is still growing, from a population point of view, far quicker than any other continent on the planet. And if you look at just the fertility rates, for example, in China, you'll see that it's only around 2.2, which is slightly above replacement value. But the idea that they suddenly allow three children to be born, it doesn't mean there's going to be a population boom. You know, you've already had this kind of one child policy running for a long time, in which you now have single children supporting two parents, and now they're being encouraged to have kids as well. I think it's just too expensive. You quite possibly in many developed markets, and in fact many emerging markets as well, going into a demographic problem longer term, that is akin to what happened in Japan. And you can see how Japanese markets performed over 20 years. So the fact that in South Africa, we have positive demographics, and more excitingly into Africa, if you go and look at fertility rates, of, I think it's a 5.4 in Nigeria, there are really exciting opportunities in Africa. But as you say, if you've got the blinkers on and you're not looking for them, you're going to miss out.
You're going to miss them. I'll leave it there. Gary Boyson, Portfolio Manager, Rand Swiss. Appreciate the early morning, sir.
Business, finance, and investment news. MoneyWeb Now with Simon Brown on the Money. Also available on podcast.
chatting now with Kobus Lutz, he's CEO of Pan African Resources. They put out a statement which I frankly didn't realize at all. It was around the renewal of the Barberton Mines mining rights and how they've got a renewal for a further 30 years. Kobus, morning, appreciate the early morning time. These are all of your Barberton Mines. It's Fairview, it's New Consort, it's just Sheba Mines, and you've got a renewal. So essentially you've got another 30 years of mining rights within those mines and those regions, effective, what, with 1st of June. So running through to, 2050 odd, when we'll probably both be a lot more lazy and retired.
Yeah, Simon, it'll probably be my last renewal on Barberton. But yes, I mean, it's great. We worked very well with the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy, and we pushed hard. Certainly, I think, also demonstrates the remaining life of these assets. I mean, it's incredible. You know, we started mining, not me, certainly, but the company started mining in Barberton in the 1870s, and we still have 20 years plus of life on these assets, so that's great.
Yeah, and that's actually a great point. I mean, this is probably one of, if not the longest mining space anywhere in the world. I mean, it's 150 years of mining. What struck me was, in hindsight, of course, the licenses must be for a defined period. I mean, I'm assuming that as the Department of Mineral Petroleum Resources, they're issuing licenses, they are going to have a finite period of time. Is that duration typically a 30-year, or is the DMRE going to look at circumstances on the ground to perhaps give longer or maybe even shorter?
So it very much depends on the technical motivation that you put forward, Simon, on the economic lives of these mines. So we've done a lot of work. If you recall, some years ago, Barberton always had a 5 or 6 years life just because that was what was proven up. But you know, we've deployed a lot of or employed a lot of new technology with great people. Looking at our mines, and we were able to motivate a 30-year life, which is why this extension was granted for that period. And it's incredible, you know, after all these years more than a century of mining, we're still finding new ore bodies, new exciting areas, and that's why we're investing a lot into these underground operations, also opening up new ore bodies, allowing us to mine more. So, yes, after all these years, there's still a lot of potential in those Barberton Hills.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, 1870s, you know, Joburg, we started mining gold about, 20-odd years later than that. I mean, Barberton, if memory serves, I mean, that was the first place we really got gold going in South Africa. And it is, we look at the Witwatersrand gold base, and actually Barberton puts it to shame in many senses.
Yeah, it does. I think it's also the site of Southern Africa's first stock exchange. The facade is still there. So you know, it shows the economic boom that the area experienced. And yeah, I mean, certainly it doesn't have the scale that the Wits has. But you know, for a company like Pan African, if you look at all the gold that's ever been mined out of those the Barberton ore bodies, about 70-80% of it's come from our operations. So it tells you the quality of our operation.
It's Kobus Lutz, CEO of Pan African Resources. Bad licenses to expire, although they can also be renewed. Kobus, appreciate the early morning time. Barberton First Stock Exchange has a really useless factoid. Then was Kimberley. Then was Pietermaritzburg. Third stock exchange in South Africa was in Pietermaritzburg. No idea why. I've lived there. I don't know why they had a stock exchange. Lovely place, but I don't know why they had a stock exchange. Joburg was the fourth stock exchange in South Africa. That's it for today. Remember, we are on our Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. We're always doing our polls to you. We were asking on Friday, process. We chatted with Preston Naremsami about the process buying Stack Overflow for $1.8 billion. My question was, isn't that a bit of a small deal? Don't they need to do bigger deals? Well, half of you saying, in fact, a little over half, saying, nope, it's a good start. And I suppose fair enough. You know, throwing a spaghetti at the wall, as Kurt Becker used to say, some of it will stick. A third of you were saying, nope, they do need some massive deals. And then a couple of you were saying, no man, 10 cents, great, don't worry about it. That's it for Monday, live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m., podcast available from 7 a.m. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie, Kudora, and Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for the early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.